Hey, Dopes. Our next system is a really important one. It's one that we don't take very good care of often with our traditional American diet. But it's one of the three systems that I was given advice from a doctor years ago that some simple planning and some, observations, there's three systems you can really affect the majority of your health with cardiovascular, which we already talked about, the respiratory, by maintaining lung flexibility and health, and obviously not smoking. And the third system is the digestive. Traditional American diet is super tasty, but it is high fats and low fiber in general. And that's a nightmare for this system. So we'll talk about some simple things during it, besides just the structure and function of it, some things you can do to maintain digestive health. To study this system, we'll divide it into two main features. The first one is the alimentary canal, and the second are the accessory digestive organs. Now, the alimentary canal is an unbroken pipe that goes from your mouth to the anus. When you think about it, when you throw your food in your mouth and you chew it up, that food, even though it's moving through the inside of this pipe, is never really in your body or not part of you until it crosses a membrane. Otherwise, it's in a lumen, which is technically outside of your body. The accessory digestive organs, the food never passes through them, but they squirt juices and such onto your food to help the digestive process. We'll cover them separately. So for those that have a book at home, go to page 864. And for those that don't, I've included all these pictures on my webpage under images. So you should open up and have the pictures open while we talk about it. The first one, page 864, shows organs of the alimentary canal. Now this picture is greatly simplified. If you were to cut open and look inside the body, it is not this simple to see, but they show general sizes and proportions and locations in this drawing, and it helps us identify them relative to each other at least. So the organs of the alimentary canal, for the bullets that follow, it starts with the mouth, goes into the pharynx, which is of course your throat, and then down the esophagus into the stomach. Spend some time there, and then it goes from the stomach to the small intestine, and we'll talk about what happens in each of these, by the way, and from the small intestine into the large intestine. So the next bullet underneath there, I wanted you to write down that the alimentary canal in the cadaver is about 30 feet long. I always ask the kids in class, do you think it's longer or shorter in a living person? And they hem and haw about it and they do some reasoning. Anyways, the kids come up eventually with the idea that in a living person it is shorter, and it is, because at any given time, the digestive process is going on without our knowing it, and part of the digestive process is squeezing the pipes, which makes them shorter and relaxing. And obviously, when you're dead, there's no more squeezing of any of these pipes, so they're all fully extended at that point. And as I said for the second bullet, remember that food is technically outside of your body when it's in the lumen of these pipes. All right, the first structure we're going to talk about is the mouth. In more sciencey terms, aka oral cavity. And obviously, you throw your food in there, and then the teeth are going to cut and grind the food into smaller and smaller pieces. Now your mama would tell you that so you don't choke on your food, and of course mama's always right, but your biology teacher, me, I'm going to tell you that the better, more important part of chewing up your food is greatly increasing its surface area. You know, remember something, when this stuff splashes down in your stomach, the only part of your food that's going to be exposed to chemicals is the part on the surface of your food. So the more you chew it up, the more is exposed to chemicals immediately in your stomach. It greatly speeds up the efficiency and cuts down on the time of breaking down your food. Also in your mouth, you have palatine and lingual tonsils. And remember, they're not there just to try to eliminate all the bacteria. They're there to sample what's heading that way, to put out any warnings that they might need to. The second one we talk about is the pharynx, and aka throat. You probably knew that already from previous. It is interesting to note that the walls of the pharynx contain skeletal muscle. You probably remember the three types of muscle, and skeletal you have conscious control over. And if you chew your food up and your tongue is darting back and forth, pushing it around, you're chewing it in smaller and smaller pieces, once your brain says, hey, it's time to swallow, the pharynx, you have control over the pharynx. It makes the muscular contractions that ball it up in the back of your mouth, and down it goes. And from that point on, it's on cruise control. The rest of it is lined with smooth muscle, which we have no conscious control of. And it, as you know, if you ever swallowed too big food or dry food and it gets stuck in your esophagus, you can't just re-swallow the esophagus. You can't make it do it by itself. Esophagus is about 10 inches long, and it pushes food down the pipe by a process called peristalsis. It's not just like, you know, falling down into your stomach by gravity. Now, we used to do an old experiment back when there was fewer lawsuits in school. I would have the kids take a big old mouthful of water and then do a handstand against the wall and then swallow the water. And the water goes up against the force of gravity into their stomach without any of it leaking out. So it's muscular contractions that push it down that tube. But you know, nowadays, stuff like that's probably too dangerous. And then the esophagus, although it's different than the rest of the pipes, it does have the same four layers as the stomach, small intestine, and large intestine. For the next section of notes, we're going to talk about the four layers that you would find in those four pipes I just mentioned. For the book, we need to flip now to page 867 to see these layers. First one is the mucosa. That's going to be the one that your food is sitting on. It's the one that lines the lumen. So it's the innermost layer, lines the lumen. Second bullet, stratified squamous, so fried eggs in the esophagus. And after the esophagus, the mucosa is simple columnar cells, which you remember those look like when we did the tissues. The submucosa, I literally translate to beneath mucosa, and it contains connective tissue, blood vessels, nerves, and submucosal glands. The next layer is muscularis externa, and it's two layers of smooth muscle, and we've looked at this before. They run in perpendicular to each other. There's a circular layer and a longitudinal layer. And when we looked at this under the microscope, you could see the spindle shape from the side on the circular layer, and on the longitudinal layer, it just looked like pipes because you were seeing it running long ways to you. So those two layers work together to squeeze they make the lumen smaller and they make the pipe shorter when the two different layers are contracting. And the fourth layer is serosa. It's the outermost layer. It's also known as visceral peritoneum. And it's going to produce a liquid that's found in the peritoneal cavity, which we'll get to later. But it has that lining, that double lining thing with the fluid in between to reduce friction, because your guts jiggle around inside as you're moving. And you want to wear holes in your serosa by having friction. So it's real slippery between the pipes in there. And because you don't want your intestines just floating around and twisting into knots, they're held together in place by a mesentery, which is made of the same material. If we were doing a cat or fetal pig dissection, when you go to pull the intestines out, they cling to each other. You have to separate them to get them to come out in a single straight piece. The next structure we're going to look at along the alimentary canal is the stomach. And for this one, I need the book turned to page 878. It's a good picture, it's a good drawing of the stomach, but it also has a disgusting real photograph, which gives you an idea when you see inside the body, it's not as clean as our drawings are. Some facts about the stomach: 6 to 10 inches in length. It begins at the cardioesophageal sphincter. Now, I'm going to use the word sphincter a whole bunch, but it's rings of smooth muscle that when they constrict, they close the pipe, they close the lumen so nothing can get in or out. So the beginning of the stomach has that sphincter at it. You don't, when you have a stomach full of food and it's squeezing that food, you don't want it shooting back up your esophagus, so that sphincter stays closed. When your stomach is full, and I think some of us have experienced this on Thanksgiving, it can hold a volume of food and drink equal to a gallon. Now everybody knows what a gallon jug looks like. It is ridiculously huge, but your stomach can actually hold that much. I imagine it varies from person to person a little bit, but yuck. Now the inside of the stomach, and we used to do this with the fetal pig dissection, we would cut the stomach open lengthwise and run our finger on the inside of it. It's very, very rough on the inside. And if you look at 878 at the bottom drawing, at the inside wall of it, you see the label Rugi, and those thick folds are, they're not microscopic. They're you can see them easily in there. The stomach walls produce gastric juice. Sometimes people, when they throw up a whole bunch, and then, like, you haven't eaten any food or drank anything, and you still throw up, and kind of that kind of brownish colored stuff comes up, people say, oh, I'm throwing up bile. But actually, it's gastric juice that's coming up. And it is a really intense fluid. You would definitely want to brush your teeth and drink some water after having that washed up your esophagus and across your mouth. Inside those deep folds in the rugae are these gastric pits. And they're lined with cells, two special cells. The first are the chief cells, and they produce this stuff called pepsin. And it is an enzyme for breaking down protein. And parietal cells in there, they're the ones that produce hydrochloric acid. And it's a very strong form of acid in your stomach. The next bullet says that the breakdown of protein begins in the stomach. So protein is like meats and things, pretty familiar with that. So it's kind of a gross thing to think about. But if you have like a hamburger or something, you have like a piece of meat stuck in between your tooth, you haven't flossed or something in between your teeth, I mean, that meat will sit there until bacteria breaks it down days later. And it's not going to be a very healthy thing to have in there. So because there's no enzymes in your mouth to break down protein, it'll just sit there until the bacteria break it down. So here's a good lesson on why flossing is so important. The next bullet says food leaves the stomach looking like heavy cream, and it's got a name. It's called chyme. And we used to show this movie back when we used to meet in a classroom. And they have this camera that's inside the small intestine, and they show the sphincter open up, and this greenish-white foamy crud comes out of the stomach and into the small intestine, and it's that chyme coming in. It's not a pretty sight. That last sphincter, by the way, the one at the bottom of the stomach, it's our last bullet, is the pyloric sphincter. And again, it stays closed until the stomach is done with what it can do to the food. And then it opens up, and as the stomach contracts, it squirts that heavy cream stuff into your small intestine for the next part of food digestion. The next part of our notes packet talks about the four regions of the stomach in the order for as you move through the stomach. And they're easy to find in the drawing on page 878. The cardia is the beginning, the very start of the stomach. The second part is called the fundus that moves into the body. And the last section is the pylorus. And I would want you to look at the drawing and find each of those sections. The book has a brief description of what happens during each of those regions you should look at. Next up is the small intestine. For this one, I want you to look at page 885 of the book. Again, it's a pretty simplified drawing, but they've shaded the three regions of the small intestine in different colors, and it's worth looking at so you can see how they lie next to each other and the approximate size of each, or length of each, I should say. The duodenum is the first one. It's only about 10 inches long. That feeds into the jejunum and then the ileum, the three sections of the small intestine. The primary function of the small intestine is to absorb food molecules. This is, you can't absorb strands of chicken nuggets into your bloodstream. You have to break those proteins down to amino acids to get it in. And that's what you're going to absorb out of your food in the small intestine. It's anywhere from 8 to 20 feet long in a living person. It also has sphincters at either end. The pyloric sphincter is the one that had to open to let the food in. And there's an ileocecal sphincter at the end where it joins with the large intestine. So I want you now to turn your book to page 886. This used to be one of our practical pictures back in the day when kids had to take practicals. A big part of food absorption is going to be exposing those molecules to an enormous surface area. And I freaked out about surface area to you a few different times. And this is certainly one of them. You've got to get these trillions of molecules to be absorbed into your blood, and you don't have that much time really to make this happen. So there's going to be three physical structures that increase surface area. If you were just to take the small intestine as a straight pipe, cut it open, lay it open, it's only about an inch wide, your surface area would be like 3 feet if it was just a smooth pipe. But there are three structures that I want you to find in the drawing. The first one, the top left of the picture, are the plicae circularis. These are large folded rings on the inner walls of the intestine. If you stuck your pinky in there and felt it, you can feel these. They're ridges that are several millimeters tall. And that bumps up your surface area a little bit. The next one are the villi. And if I was sitting in the room with you right now, I'd have you hold your fingers up to the lights and make the millimeters, you know, where you put your fingers as close as you can without touching, it's about a millimeter. These villi are about this big, and we have looked at them before under the microscope back in the tissues chapter. And there's millions of these in there, and they are just visible to the naked eye, and these guys bump up surface area now quite a bit compared to just the plicae circularis. But the third feature is the microvilli, and this one you need a microscope. When we were looking at it in the lab way back, it was called brush border. You might remember that expression for it. And these guys are the ones that bump it up astronomically. So they give you a number in the book to tell you how much surface area you have. And I always try to compare it to things you're familiar with. So these three things combined give you the surface area equal to the size of a tennis court. You're just in your small intestine, the food molecules are exposed to a surface area as big as a tennis court. So try to imagine a dub-dub grilled onions, no lettuce or tomato. You take that burger, you eat it up, and then you take that burger and try to smear it over the size of an entire tennis court. How thin that would get and how many opportunities it would have for absorption. Mostly, I just wanted to talk about dub-dub's grilled onion. Okay. And then digestive juice from the pancreas and bile from the liver enter the small intestine at the duodenal papilla, which is this little peg in the very beginning of the small intestine. And those powerful juices have functions we'll discuss later as the digestion of food begins there. The next picture I'm going to have you look at is for the large intestine, and it's on page 898. And by the time the food enters this, we have pulled out most of the nutrients we're going to get. There's still some that we absorb in this large intestine, but we're kind of needing help by that point. There's some bacteria that help get some vitamins out of your food and we can absorb it. But the major job of the large intestine is to absorb the remaining water from your food to a great degree. You get most of the water out at that point. It's about 5 feet in length. It's called the large intestine because it's wider than the small intestine. It's actually quite a bit shorter, but it is wider. And if you look at the picture on A98, you'll see that it doesn't quite close. It's like a three-sided picture for a frame, or maybe even three and a half sides to it. And what they don't show you in that drawing, obviously, between those between the pipe is the small intestine. It's all curled up in between there. So here's the subdivisions of the large intestine. The first is this pouch called the cecum. If you look at the lower left of it, you see the ileocecal valve, which is a sphincter, and the food comes out of the small intestine and enters that pouch called the cecum. part of the cecum's structure you've heard of before called the appendix, and you could see it labeled there. And that little guy, when you're a child going into adolescence, has a bigger opening than other times in life, and there's a decent chance that you'll have an infection and swelling of that, and that's, of course, your appendicitis. And usually every year there's three or four kids that have had their appendix taken out. Sadly, I'm not able to ask for a show of hands today. The third is the most dominant feature, the one you've heard of the most, and it's the colon. It's the big 3.5, it's the pipe that makes up 3.5 sides to the picture frame. It's the colon and your colon health that is one of the ones that your diet has a tremendous influence on, and how simple choices in your diet can really give you great colon health. We'll talk about that soon. The next structure is the rectum. We are not rabbits. We don't have like 87 poops per day. We tend to hold on to our poop for a while and then drop it off at a, I don't know, convenient time or whatever. But the rectum is going to be the storage in that feces, I'll go with that word, until it's appropriate to get rid of it. And then the anal canal is the exit point for those feces. Subdivisions of the colon, it's pretty easy. From the time the food enters, it goes up. So that's the ascending colon. Then transverse is the one that goes across, descending colon, and then the one that gets people in a lot of trouble if they're not taking good care of their colon is the sigmoid. And that's the one that goes back to the middle, the halfway across there. As I mentioned, the rectum is storing the feces. The anus itself has not just one sphincter, but two. It's got an involuntary and a voluntary one. The involuntary one is the one that in the middle of the night keeps you from pooping the bed, which is a really big blessing. We're so glad to have that. So it's on patrol when you're not awake. And then the voluntary one, it's like you decide, okay, this is the right time and place for this event to happen. When you look at the colon, you see it's got those distinctive pouches, and they are created by this ribbon of muscle that runs the length of the colon called the tenia coli. It's one of those words that's kind of fun to say. And the pockets that it forms are called haustra. Okay, we're at the end of part one of the digestive system, and it's this time that I'm going to tell you what your homework assignment is going to be. In addition to doing the notes, we're doing a simple kind of a lab thing for 4 days, and I don't care when you start. You can start it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. For 4 days straight, I want you to write down every single thing you eat and drink for the 24-hour periods for 4 days straight. We're going to look at the food you have. I want you to do, at the end of it all, we're going to do an approximation of calories. We're going to try to estimate how much of the how many ounces of water you got in, what kinds of proteins and carbs and lipids and all that. We're going to kind of crunch that down. But we're going to start by writing down every single thing for 4 days. And I'll attach more specific instructions for what I want you to submit back to me. But prepare to do that as our lab for this unit.